Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Facebook. I need a really good theme for this morning, so we're going to move out for a minute. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. I'm your host, Stan Mason. We got everybody up in the house today. That song came to me actually about 4 o'clock this morning. I was trying to think of something that I try to put a little bit of me and what I think into approach of a show. And that song popped into my head, which is one of my favorites. And in listening to it, I heard him singing really about just decent people who have trusted the system, who feel like they're just a voice in the wilderness, and they're tired. And if you really go back later and listen to that song, and when you think he's talking about a woman, just inject the system in there, and it becomes a whole different song. But finally, the Reverend is here. I wanted to get started with today's show, and we got Dr. Facey back with us, along with the whole crew. And this week, you know, first of all, what's up, Waco, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, ATL. I'm going to let you get introduced to this show. I don't know what the hell's wrong with this country. I really don't. We've come out of timeout. COVID is over. We've come out of timeout. And it's like America should have went to a halfway house before it was allowed to come socialize again. Because I think we've forgotten how to be social. And we're out here running around, and you've got racial tensions, police tensions, political tensions, poverty, post-COVID. Now it's adding drugs and alcohol. And the fact that we've forgotten how to act socially, and we mix all these, everybody can't wait to get to the function. And Joe, you're working a ton of murders, a ton. Every time I call you, I mean, I can be a mortician. Every time I call you, Joe, you're standing over a body. Yeah, let me call you right back. I'm working a murder right now in that small town. And, brother, I want to say we're going to go around the horn, but I got to put you at the top of this and say good morning to you. What's going on?
Good morning, everyone. Happy to be here. And I think this show should be, if it goes like we just started off, this should be a lively show, so I'm not going to take it on time. I'm not going to do a Reverend Tillman.
Big Chief, good morning, Chief. How's things down your way? How you been?
Good. It's a busy week. Finishing up our budget. There's a lot of training. Our pepper sprays and cadets. Good week. Great of cadets. Nice.
All right. Good morning, Izzy. What's up, bro?
Good morning. Doing good. Busy week. Right about the police and schools. Actually, did a little interview with Joe about that. Ready to get started having a good conversation.
Excellent. Reverend T, what's going on?
I heard my name earlier. How are we doing today, Jeff? How are we doing, everybody? I'm not going to take too long to say good God morning to the church. Just want to let everybody know that I'm blessed and highly favored. I'm glad you guys for thinking about me and talking about me. If they ain't talking about you, maybe they ain't thinking about you. And let me just leave you with this. The Lord is looking right at you. So he's looking right at you. He sees you in the midnight hour. He sees you in the daytime hours. But he still loves you anyway.
He's the triple threat from Los Angeles, California. The timeless talkative titan that tackles the tough topics that take time to think through. Tactfully telling the truth today. It's Reverend Tony Tillman.
Look at that. How many words can you find that start with T that have to relate to Jesus and the gospel? Even the gospel starts with T. The gospel. Thank you, Lord. Trinity.
All right, okay. All right. Good morning, Izzy. You had your coffee, Izzy? You ready?
Yeah, I got my coffee. Ready.
All right. Big Don, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. It's always an objection with Tony. So, Tony, to ask your teeth, I would say truth. I just look forward to another amazing show, and we have the amazing Dr. Tracy here, and I expect an explosive show. Let's get it.
All right. Good morning, Dr. Fetty. Welcome back. How are you?
Good morning. It is good to be among the brethren here. Praise the Lord. I'm with a sister in. Hey.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm glad to be a part of the panel. It was a subject that I really wanted to talk about.
You know, we'll do it here. Before we get started, the young lady that just popped in at the bottom sent me a message, and she... You know, we always talk about on the show putting some action behind your words and what you do. And she reached out to me yesterday, and she wanted to come on and take a minute and talk about a walk that she does. And I got some time, and I went back, and I figured, okay, you know, there's somebody that probably walking a mile for whatever. And I went to her Facebook, and I looked at how far she walks, and I'm going to let her talk about why she does it, but I'm going to tell you one, and she does it with these two huge Alaskan objects, huge. Good morning, dear. Introduce yourself and take some time. Tell us about your program, what you do, why you do it, and how people can help you.
Good morning. Namaste. Can you all hear me?
Yes. Perfect.
All right. Yesterday was my birthday, so I got a cake on my face. And in my hair, so I decided to wear a headscarf and do the, you know. Thank you for inviting me. I don't do this walk myself. It's called Shanti Walk. Shanti meaning peace in my language. And it's a peace walk that the last one we did was 150 miles from Brownwood, Texas to the state capital. We attempted to meet quite a few legislators. We met a few, we talked to them about legislation, and the main reason we walk is for our children. Our Children Matter Most is the organization, and we are walking, basically Forrest Gumping it, we are walking every state, minimally 111 miles to that state capital, and we are organizing meetings, separate groups, different groups. Some groups talk about, you know, gun violence in schools. Other groups that talk about, you know, obviously the legal abuse that our children face. That seems to be the main thing. And you had my co-walker guest, Jason D'Souza, who walked with me and the husky. So I really appreciate that. And it might seem at first, I was like, what is walking going to do? You know, I got to raise, you know, create a nonprofit. I got to raise serious money. I got to do lobbying because my background is business. I'm planning to go to law school, and I thought I was going to go at it that way. But those are solutions that are, you know, behind closed doors, and a lot of people don't know what's happening to families and children in family court. They are being legally trafficked by unethical judges, attorneys, and other officials. And if anybody tries to speak up, like me, we are being threatened. We are harassed. I almost got killed 3 times. I was drugged once. And so the only way that I feel like we, a few of us feel like we are able to not only protect ourselves and keep doing our work is just to walk. We start walking and then people talk to us. We start, the conversation starts. And when conversation starts, it feels like a spiritual and religious experience, to be honest with you. Because when you walk, you are a part of the elements, and you talk, and you have this teamwork, and you feel so small, you know? And you forget, hey, look at this planet. Look at it's a spiritual awakening experience for me and for people who walk with me. And along the way, we are making these friendships, these connections. And mainstream media won't report us because they don't want anybody to know what's happening to our children. You know, but eventually people start talking, and it's a very, very grassroots way of trying to affect some positive change for our children in this country and all over the world. We've been invited to walk in Scotland, New Zealand, India, but we're very small now. So that's the purpose of our Shanti Walk. I hope that's a good description.
Well, I'll tell you, I was impressed, and, you know, I would urge people, if they go to your Facebook and just actually see you doing it. You know, I mean, it's, like I said, you got 2 big, huge Alaskan mountains that you're walking with you, that are with you all the time when you walk. And just the fact that you do all that, it's, look at that.
Oh. Yes, this is Luke and his brother, Lex. So this joke, Marla, that is Luke Skywalker and Lex Luthor, the good wolf and the naughty wolf. Not the bad one, naughty. So the key is to stay in balance. And honestly, they saved my life because I went through some very, very, and still going through some very, very difficult times in family court in Texas. And because of my work, I've not been allowed to see my children for over a year or talk to them. But my case is hardly anything compared to what's happening to some other parents, you know? Yeah.
Well, we definitely appreciate having you here. And, you know, if people want to follow you guys, where can they follow you or reach out or donate to your cause?
They can walk with us. That's how they follow us.
Wow.
Join us. Texas. We're moving to Texas. We're moving back there. Welcome. As soon as God opens up the door that we're waiting for. Yes, ma'am. And we start with you. Thank you. And we do have a website, Our Children Matter Most, OCMM. We have our Facebook page, which is the best way for people to get in touch with us. It's called Our Children Matter Most. Just the whole thing, you know. If not, you know, I'm always here. My email address is alphamomomega@gmail.com. I give it out openly. We always want people to, you know, to hear about us. Because we're doing the same thing that you want us to do, you know. A lot of people have full-time jobs and they can't walk, but they provide, you know, other kinds of support and, you know, get us meetings or get us media exposure. That's how I got on this show. So thank you, Stan, for inviting me on here.
Oh, you're welcome. And you're certainly welcome to stay and be a part of this whole conversation, because this is going to get real deep real quick today, you know, with especially with the expertise that I have around me, because these are some great people that are around me. So I'm real fortunate. And Joe, does anybody have anything they want to ask of her before we transition into the hot box? All right. Joe, I need you to kick this off, because you're right in the thick of it right now. I mean, it's bodies are dropping in America like leaves from a tree in the fall. And like I said at the top of the show, we don't know how to act. America needs to be in a halfway house somewhere before they're re-socialized. Chief, you're dealing with it. You guys, take it away.
Let me kick this off, and I'm sure I'm waiting for the hate mail to start. But my problem isn't with America right now. My problem is Black America. My problem is I'm not picking up random bodies. I'm picking up black kids, black men, black women. That are shot by other black men and black women. So my topic and my concern is not the general welfare, but the specific welfare of the people that are committing acts of genocide. Let's call them what it is. Often we want to sugarcoat our we want to blame everybody else. Oh, the white man did it, or so-and-so did it. And that's all bullshit. Let me just start kick this off, and I'll show you the money. The fact is, until we start admitting that we have a problem, you can't talk about anybody else's damn problem. And that's for me. Said, you know how many times we've talked to Chief, even Tony, sometimes, John, all of you called me in the last couple of weeks of where I've been. I've been at work. I'm picking up, last night in Chicago, on 75th Street, 10 people were shot in one instance. 10. I got 14-year-old shooters now. 14-year-old people killing other kids. I mean, they're hitters. I mean, forgive me what I'm about to say. They are hitters. Legitimate, bona fide hitters. And well, let me define hitters. Their job is to kill. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. Now, understand this, at least in Illinois. Juveniles are a protected class. We can't approach them the same way I approach them. In Illinois, again, we're talking about the big conflict of these theoreticians, politicians, and commissions who never ask the people what should happen. They just raised the age of juveniles to 21. Listen to what I just said. Juvenile is a protected class. I now have a shooter who commits a murder at the age of 20. I have to give him the same protection I do with 14, 15, 16-year-old. What kind of bullshit is that?
Now, in Texas, we call it bullshit. This morning, actually, as we're doing this, Ken Paxton has invited people in his war room, media room, to talk about what's happening in Austin. Attorney General, I don't know why. Like 16 people got shot at, and I think a few died. I don't know the exact number here in Austin, Texas, on Saturday night at a bar, and it's really, really, really shocking. I used to live in Chicago, by the way, so I love that.
Smart move, my dear. but again, let's go back to the very best. I mean, we were talking about the support show kicked off, John. You know where I'm about to go. Let's talk about this term genocide. Let's talk about this thing called black-on-black crime, which I'm sure I'm waiting for Meech, because I know he's lurking somewhere. They want to talk about there is no such thing. Well, I tell you what, when your ass is getting stuck up in your community, please look at that guy and say, are you a white guy? Are you a Mexican? Oh, wait a minute, you're black. Why are you sticking me up? And when they get finished shooting your ass, who do you need, who you call? You call the police. Of course, now, remember, we don't like the police because they're not good people. Are there some bad police? But let's get that out of the way. Yes, there are. As of last night, the FOP here in Chicago defended another Chicago policeman who was caught in the insurrection. Defended him. So do we have a problem with policing? Yes. But if we acted the way we're supposed to, we wouldn't need the damn police. At least that's my opinion.
You make a good point. And you make a very valid point. You know, and that's what I preach to people all along. If you get pulled over, if somebody is saying, okay, we're going to pull you over, I'm targeting you because you're black. I get that. Maybe it's wrong. It is wrong, but it happens. But once they pull you over, don't be found with drugs in your car.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be found with the gun. Don't
mm-hmm.
be found doing the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, therefore, if everything is to go, I mean, if the police officer is just a bad person in general, it can go south anyway. But if everybody's on the up and up and on the good, on doing the right thing, then that person's going to say, well, your light was out. Here's either a ticket or you got some time to get it fixed or whatever their case they do. And you go on about your way. But it's when they go and say, can I check your car? You smell like you've been smoking weed. You got, you know, and then they start finding all these things. Now we have a bigger problem. So, yes, you're absolutely right. If you be found doing the right thing, more than likely, things won't happen.
And I'm sorry, I'm just going to jump in here real quick. That is statistically not true. If you're doing the right thing, you're going to be, nothing's going to happen to you. Statistically, that is not true. If you are black and get stopped, if you are a minority and get stopped, statistically, no matter whether or not you're doing good or bad, it's more likely that the situation is going to go bad for a minority than it is for a white person.
I wasn't questioning that. That's not what I was only saying that according to what Mr. Joseph was saying. I'm not saying that you're wrong, McKenzie, because you are right when it goes like that. But I'm just saying, you know, if more people would have the mindset of saying, I'm going to do right in the first place. I'm not going to carry drugs with me. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to carry a weapon with me. You know what I'm saying?
No, I know what you're saying, but my counter to that would be it's more of the community for these guys that are carrying guns and have drugs, a better education system, better stuff like that. It's an oversimplification.
Right.
I can't expect people that are in certain circumstances to think like people in this panel. Everybody in this panel is from most likely a higher economic bracket, a higher education bracket.
No, I started out on the bottom. I was a foster kid growing up. I was supposed to fail at everything.
Right. No, but
so a person can't tell me that they can't get. I'm not saying every circumstance, but I was at the bottom.
Right.
It could have been no further down than I could have gotten. My brother had been in and out of prison. He was 18 as soon as he got 18, and he's 54 now. I'm 55, so I already seen all sides of that. And so I'm saying, and I tell him, even though we were at the bottom, there was a way for you to still make some different choices. So I'm not saying that it's not possible. I mean, I'm not saying that everybody has all the chances. And you do have choices. God gives each and every one of us a choice to do the right thing or not.
Well, let's wrap up here for one second.
Come on, John.
I just want to say to Dr. Stacy's point, I agree with his view a lot on that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I will say, Dr. Stacy, is that you raise a valid point. If we are clean, and there's no drugs on us, there's no guns on us, then the focus now becomes about the cops' actions. And you could raise that so they supervise. But the second that you're found with drugs, you're found with a gun on you, or you have this attitude towards this officer that pulls you over,
mm-hmm.
when the sergeant or lieutenant or whoever comes to the scene, it's no longer about the cop's actions. It's
right.
About your actions. So from that perspective, I understand where you're coming from. But Joe was touching on something totally different. And he's talking about these young killers, hitters, they call them. Well, that mind was trained and groomed, Joe. Because you got older guys in the streets who know that if they were to go out and put the work in, they're going to get banged in the court.
Yeah.
So now you start feeding this mindset to these young kids, and you make like you're taking good care of them, and what you're doing is you're grooming them. And you're grooming them into being, building a name for yourself. Yo, you got to make a name for yourself, Shorty. And they ain't going to give you no time, Shorty, because at the end of the day, you fall prisoner. First time offense. There's a whole bunch of things that come into play. And I know that federally, a lot of guys were released from prison because they were sentenced over 50 years, and it was under 16 and under. You couldn't sentence kids to over 50 years. Well, 2 years back, they overturned that so that you can no longer sentence them to these big sentences, lifetime sentences, and 200 years for committing two or three murders. So they overturned a case in the federal courts with regards to kids being, and there was a lot of guys that I was locked up with who have done 30-some years. They're out now as a result of them overturning that case. So you got young guys who are being groomed, not just wanting to make a name for themselves, they're also being groomed by older dudes, which is wrong.
Yeah, but I, for me, again, going back to a very basic point, where is the problem? Problem, again, we get, are we bad religion? Yes, yes, we get all that. Does religion teach you certain? Yeah, yeah, I get all that. My problem, again, on this topic today, is us. Nobody else can give a damn about the police. I'm talking about us. How do we correct our behavior?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem I have is, again, simultaneously, when you call me twice a week, I'm on scene. I was up for 24, and I'm dealing with, I've got a kid who just saw her father killed in front of her. So now we're talking about trauma. We're talking about a family that's reduced to rubble. And we're talking about when we catch the who we believe to be the offenders, we're going to destroy another two or three families. But the base point is, how did we get to this place?
I think if you don't mind me saying, from a layperson standpoint, I don't have as much background and knowledge as you guys who seem to be in law enforcement. But coming from a country, India, I was born and raised in India. Nobody carries guns in India. We don't have mass shootings in schools in India. We don't have them. We have other crimes, you know, serious other crimes. Like, it's a rape culture, unfortunately, against women. But with this particular subject, there is also a sense of community in India.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the problem here is so stark for someone who is born and raised in India who comes here and sees, yes, we have all the freedom in the world here, but nobody really knows anybody. It's very nuclear. And that creates a situation in a human being's psyche, and then everybody wants attention. And the way they get their attention is through media, social media, and this and that, and having that certain, certain status in society, whether you are, one of the Kardashian girls, or you are somebody in the street trying to, make a name for yourself and wants to be a hitter. So I think healing is required for us as people in our own environments, in our own communities. When in my village town in India, when there was there was not gun violence, but there was an incident of acid throwing against one of my, it was a big thing, against one of my schoolmates. The whole school came down, and we all started going to the temple, we started praying, we started doing those kind of things in school, because everybody in the community got together and said, if that can happen to this child or this family, it can happen anywhere else, to any one of us. So things like that. I think the number one thing is having a sense of community and healing ourselves and not being so nuclear. I don't know. That's such a big task. I think only God can come and do that for us.
But that really goes into what I was saying is, I look at, like, right now, and I feel like America, we've all been locked up for a year, more or less, COVID. So everybody don't say, I don't know what it's like to be in jail. Yeah, you do. It was just your house. But for practical purposes, we were all locked up for a year. And the floodgates have opened. And I think that while we had a lot of time to read, some of us who've never read anything picked up books and finally read. Some people just continued to do mass TikTok videos or whatever. But as people started gaining more knowledge, I think that went out the window when the economy opened back up. And everybody came out with their biases, their prejudice, their anger, their rage, from all the gamut of things that unfortunately we had to see while we were locked in the house, whether it was the racial violence, whether it was the political violence, whether all these things that bubbled in our heads, and we had our small circles of people who believe like we believe, but now we're back out in society, And everybody doesn't believe what we believe. And like you said, discussion and talking, everybody's not willing to talk. Some people talk. They want to win the conversation. They're not interested in interacting. And we're getting a lot of these comments. I mean, thank God I don't do that job anymore. I mean, I got tired of working the murders. I got sick of it. And so for me to call Joe, and I'm quite literally, every time I call Joe, he's standing over somebody's body. I'm working this murder. You know, and it gets to be a lot. And there are no, I don't see any viable solutions coming from a whole lot of the avenues that we would expect. Most of us on here are children of the 60s or 70s. And you knew that whole neighborhood. What's up, Bow Street? That whole neighborhood was your family. And the neighborhood took care of business. Did we have shootings and murder? Yes. Did we have anything on the degree we have right now? No, we didn't. Because the family was not just the nuclear family in your house. It was the next door neighbor on your left and your right and across the street. And some of that went, ego drove it out, and some of it the government drove out and destroyed the family. Because every one of us on here probably, well, Tony's young, I don't know, but all of us remember a time where the standard punishment, the absolute, this was the bare minimum. I'm not talking about the ass whipping. I'm talking about the bare minimum. Punishment was, you're going to bed with no supper. Now, all of us managed to survive that night. All of us managed to be rational, functional human beings. We didn't go shoot up a school. If you did that today, not only would CPS come and take your kids, the police will put a child abuse charge on you, and you may be in jail. And all these are nuclear things that all the people making decisions right now, positions of power, we all grew up under those rules, and they work.
But that goes back to one of the subjects we talk about all the time, discretion of the police. Because I've been in a situation where the lady, you know, we get a call of abuse or whatever, one lady told me, well, this little bad mother, so-and-so, you take him with you, officer. I'm like, no.
So, Joe, but before I go to the chief, I want to ask you, these two entities. Number one, I don't think we're going to legislate our way out of this violence problem because the government is participating in it. The government is complicit in it because from the, you know, God, I'm not getting on Second Amendment people. If you want to call, you can. I'm not talking about y'all. But you got Governor Deals on Wheels down there in Texas, wants to give everybody and their mother a gun like they don't have crazy folks in Texas. Texas is capital crazy. Now, so we can forget the government.
I agree.
Yeah, we can forget the government legislating us out of this. The second one, no offense, Doc, Rev, the church. We might as well just forget about the church. Go ahead, John.
Is it not our problem to fix?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we
exactly.
You can't sit back and wait on the ones who created the condition. You change the condition that
mm-hmm.
they just said
mm-hmm.
for you to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's look at the crack epidemic. This is all a long, drawn-out process to create the environment that we have today.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as people say that, you know, I don't want to get into that. I won't say that because it's going to lead somewhere else. But I will say this. That we're talking about community,
mm-hmm.
and I look around and I ask the question, where is our community?
Mm-hmm.
When I go into where I grew up at, I look at as what are you doing over here? The stores, it may be a Spanish store here, and a black guy got a little fish market here, but they don't own the building. They don't own anything. They don't own the houses in the community. When I came up, I knew the guy at the store, and the guy knew that I could go to the store and say, yo, put this on my mother's credit. Because
mm-hmm.
he knew me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how stores work in the community. It's not like that. So now what you have is a community where kids are having kids.
Mm-hmm.
People thought I was crazy because I wouldn't allow my daughters to play with dog babies because to me, it made them grow faster than they needed because they were making the babies more real. But you got babies having babies. Mothers are not in the
drugs or locked up in prison. So now these kids have to figure out life for themselves. So how is it that you expect them who don't know how to sew? Like your mother knew how to sew, Joe. Their mother knew how to sew. Dr. Facebook, even today, cooking. These kids don't know how to cook. Everything is microwave or McDonald's or Burger King.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about community, there wasn't a person in the neighborhood you could go and like, wait, come here, bring me those pants. Let me sew those right quick.
Yep.
Your mother's going to kill you ripping those clothes out here. Those are your good clothes. Don't change.
Mm-hmm.
There was a sense of community. But my question today is, where is the community? Where is the community? And then you have these young parents who want to get ahead. They don't mind if their kids sell drugs. It's only a problem when the system is so far unfair to them. It's only a problem when their kids get killed in the street. Now they want to be an advocate against gun violence. But you was holding guns and drugs for your kids just 6 months ago.
Say that.
Real talk right there. Amen.
I know this firsthand. I've been in homes with young kids. They mothers holding $30,000, $40,000 for them. Going in their house and bag drugs up in their house. And then other kids are sitting there that's 9, 8 years old coming back and forth. I know this is being real. This is what our community is today.
A friend of mine, was talking to me about how City of Austin is, you know, setting aside a substantial amount of funds to promote more African American, Asian, and also Latin culture. And I was wondering, how are they going to do that? Through legislation? They're doing it through music, through food, through art shows. And at first it felt like, yeah, I don't know. But I think that is a great way to kind of get people who are either dealing with a mental illness or dealing with, you know, a family history of drug problems. And how do we help those people? Distract them. Get them to become good musicians, good artists, or, you know, to, you know, distract them from this life that they don't know any other way to live. And I think that's a good idea that City of Austin is doing. Hopefully, you know, we'll get some success in that. Because often with South by Southwest, ACL, and all of those things, you know, where there's music and art and culture created, I think that is a good way, a roundabout way to come and kind of, you know, tell people, hey, there's other things in life other than, you know, starting a gang and, you know, and shooting up stuff in your veins and selling drugs. There are other things that are usually more fun. So maybe that's going to be helpful.
That's all well and good. I think that's a great, you know, great road to hoe, but here is the problem. Brian Booker puts on this generational systemic racism against minority. There's a lot of people that the problem makes it difficult for minorities to overcome. Just so you know, anybody out there listening, my parents were poor. That did not give me right or reason to be an asshole. And so let's call it what it is. I mean, the reality is that these people are acting out. Now, who are these people? It's me. It's us. I'm not worried about the rest of the world. Hell, I'm kind of worried about the rest of the world, and I can't get my piece of the world in rest. So again, let's get back to the very basic point. How do we court our actions before we go fucking around in somebody else's house, in your house also? And we got a lot of cleaning to do that's got to start soon. Otherwise, I don't give the everything. We cannot legislate our way out. We also can't arrest our way out.
Mm-hmm.
And who's in the jail? If we only make up, and I say we, if we only make up 14% of the population nationwide, we're 65% of the people in these correctional facilities. What does that talk about college or education? What does that talk about health care? What does that go to all these issues? And we're looking at genocide, if you want to call it, you call it what you want. You can say whoever did it, they did it. I get all that. You know, we can talk about conspiracy theories up to your ass. But what are we going to do about it at the end of the day? Go to the morgue and you tell me who's at your city morgue. Go to your neighbor and tell me who's getting shot. Go to your grocery store and see what's not there. And then come back and tell me about all these conspiracy theories, because it ain't going to feed you, that's one. And it ain't stop shit. So until we really deal with that, don't mean nothing.
Reverend Tony.
It starts in the home. Mm-hmm. It really does. It starts in the home. I mean, you know, if you, you know, we want to talk about the community. Yes, the community does matter. It really, really does. Because even with me growing up in a foster home, in the different foster homes I was at, because of the year in the 60s I was in, we still had neighborhoods that did that. But it still starts in the home. Trauma begins a lot of times in the home. And you, and until we start dealing with the fathers coming back in, allowing the fathers being back in the homes, the system, if they're going to help the poor with the fathers in the home. Don't sit and say the father has to be out the home in order to get the help. But make the fathers, if that's what we're going to talk about, make the fathers become more responsible while they're in the home. If you're going to get money for a help up, a level up, then we're gonna allow you to have the money to don't stop it and say we're only gonna help the mama as long as they have to pay. You see what I'm saying? There has to be a point where we say bring the dad back in. But dads, while you're in, you need to be out there working. You need to. So I think it's a plethora of things. It's really just a whole lot of different things that we can look at. But fathers need to be working, and if the moms have to go out and work, I think it's something that we need to get back to with, I mean, I know economically, it's just really hard because we've gotten so far out of all the reach. You got to have two incomes because everything's done, you know, the rich are getting rich and the poor are getting poor. So you don't, so both parents are actually having to go out and work where it wasn't always like that. So if they're both going out to work, that's why we have the microwaves. You know what I'm saying? The fact everything, the latchkey kids. So there's trauma that's been going on in the home. So much so that it's hard to really pinpoint what we can do at the end of the day. You know, but I do still say it starts at home. Get back to teaching regular morals. Go back to teaching regular, I would say Bible stories, but even if you don't want to teach Bible stories, teach things that teach a person, you know, go get back to regular mannerisms, you know, how to conduct yourself when you're out in public, how to treat the elderly, how to treat other people. You know, right now, kids are not being taught anything in the home.
You know, Doctor.
Go ahead.
I mean, Rachel, we had this discussion last week in the interview. She asked me a question about it. You know, I look at these young people today, and they're like, and I'm going to date myself and Joe's, they're like cassette tapes. Some people almost a cassette tape. You know, there's nothing on them, and they're on record. Now, I got to say this. The church came up with this term, the young adults choir, the young adults mission, no such thing. When we grew up, there were no young adults. You were a kid. Or you were an adult. We had definitive avenues and views and expectations. When that, particularly in the black church, when that term came out, what happened? We told our young men, be a man, boy. Then when they started acting like a man, we turned around and said, stay in a child's place. Now they're confused. They don't know what to do. You're telling me do this? What do I do? So they go out and identify with Pookie, Ray Ray, or Binky, who's willing to give them an avenue whereby which they can just be this, and that defines them. And John will tell you, John had these young folks out there. Once you give them attention and at least they have a goal, a series of expectations, but we can't tell these kids that be a man, then when they act like a man, because what happens when they get older, I won't say grow up because a lot of them don't, when they get older, have babies, guess what? They're not going to be a good father or a good mother because they were never allowed to be a child. So they don't know how to raise a child because they had to cook because mom is out there running the streets thinking she's 17 again. Dad is out playing ball with the fellas.
No, she is 17.
Yeah, and the kids got to come home and cook dinner and do everything else. You know, I mean, the nuclear family is not this definition America has 2.5 kids and a picket fence. I never understood what the 0.5 kid is. Maybe it's a goldfish. But, you know, Chief, you want to jump in here? I see you down there thinking.
Yeah, I can't disagree with anything that's been said. What Joe is talking about, and again, I'll wait for the hate mail, but International Chiefs of Police almost every single year talks about black-on-black crime. It's a problem. And again, it's not in my area. Let's say I don't have this specific issue. But if you don't believe that, it's true, then go hang out with Joe. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. This is what he's doing. Right? These are the people that he is seeing that are the victims, right? The ones that suffer the consequences as a result. This is a societal issue. Mm-hmm. Right? Let's just get down to the brass tacks on. This is a societal issue. You're not going to legislate yourself out of it. There's no amount of funding or programming that you can put forth that's going to fix this problem. It is huge. It is an enormous issue that is, and it's nothing new. This is nothing new. I think when we start talking about the issues of coming out of quarantine, I think we were just kind of a little blindsided by certain things, like, you know, the insurrection and police reform that's still BS. The police reform bill is ridiculous. But, you know, let's call it what it is. I mean, were they, and I'll ask Joe, did they stop killing people during the pandemic in Illinois?
Nope. No.
I mean, crime is being committed, guys. That's the thing. Rapes, robberies, and murders and all kinds of heinous things going on across the country. The pandemic didn't stop any of that. It kept some of us inside. But bad people.
And they stayed home and killed family members. You know, why don't they?
But bad people, truly bad, evil people, they can give a crap about your mask mandate or your business being closed or you not being able to walk into that facility. They didn't care. They were still dealing dope. They were still killing people. And what I find most concerning out of this whole thing was you drop bombs on me or whatever, is 14-year-old kids. Their assignment is to kill people. The only other group of people that I know that is happening with is the cartel. You know, the horror stories that you hear about the cartel. I think this Illinois law about changing the definition of a juvenile is insane in Texas. Yeah, there's certain rules and protections that juveniles have. You have to have a mandatory warning, and you got to do all these things, you know, before we start to, you know, interview them and you know, can't have a gun present, and I get all that. But that's for people that are young, their minds haven't developed fully. 20 years of age, you know right from wrong. Don't give me that crap. That's not a juvenile, it's an adult. 17 years of age, you're an adult. You know the difference between right and wrong.
That goes on though, what's his name? Yeah, I'm sorry. But also it has to do with the trauma, though. I mean, you can, if a person has been, if people have been traumatized as children, their minds don't grow the same. They're already, you know, they're stuck in certain ways. And I think that it's kind of like what Izzy was saying, you know, certain things have failed them. So, you know,
I just think
they're not grown. I mean, they're not grown in the mind. Because they are 20, and so I do understand what you guys are saying as far as them being their age, they're grown adults. I do get that.
I agree. There are certain people with some trauma that may issue, but I'm going to call them. I'm not going to buy that until they're personally actually diagnosed with some sort of disability. Because I've seen that too many times where, I've been victimized and my brain hasn't developed. So that's you knew enough to go in and rob that place. You knew enough to know how to count money by selling dope, stealing cars.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to buy all of that.
But you say, hey, Chief, I'm going to ask you a question, Chief. This is a question for any of you guys that have been law enforcement. How long would you say legally medically do someone say to anger?
They can answer
that. You go to court, I mean, been to court, and doctors done testify in court about this. And the point that I'm making is that some
your anger management, if the court deems you a mentally, very angry person, and if you have, you know, anxiety disorder or whatever, as for the DSM-5 manual, a licensed psychologist or psychiatrist has to give that name, that label. And if it's anger-related issues, there's anger management classes. You're going to get taken away.
This is what I'm saying. The average guy who's big, and he goes to court, and they use all this, like, almost kind of like what Jeff was saying. There's a lot of this bullshit, and a lot of people are relying on, I was temporarily insane at the time, or I was angry, so he did this, and I went and shot him. But people only stay angry this long. I know this firsthand because I've been in situations where by the time I went to go get the gun, I was no longer angry. And whatever I went to go do after that was me. And of course, you need to really look at that. Because the person only stays angry for so long. If I'm angry an hour later, then that's not anger. That's me. That's my ego. That's my pride. You know, me personally,
I mean, John, you're spot on. I mean, you're the guy that was on the street. I saw Joe pointing, and I don't understand. If you agree, I think we as a country have latched off to this and used it too much. I mean, there are people legitimately in mental health crisis that have issues. I mean, don't get me wrong, they have issues. But to sometimes use that for that as an excuse for lack of prosecution.
But we also understand that most generally it's not the black people that are being able to get away with that.
I'm not saying
they should be given those excuses. Don't get me wrong. I'm saying when we talk about the diagnosis, this ain't normally our people getting diagnosed.
Let me get Isidoro, and he wanted to get in here real quick. Come on, Iz.
I mean, in my experience, and I've interviewed a few judges and stuff in the courts, I can tell you right now that black, brown, white, Asian, anything, they usually ignore whether or not you get diagnosed or not. There's a general lack of belief in medical health, mental health, any of the science. They ignore it. So you can have even in the ideal situation we're talking about right now, where some 14-year-old kid or 17-year-old kid gets in front of a judge and says, oh, I have anger management issues, I have trauma, and is fortunate enough to actually get diagnosed with that. Now, 9 times out of 10, the judge doesn't give a shit. They throw it out and he goes to jail regardless. They don't care. Let me tell you what court standard is. The court standard is called and defined as this thing called a cool-off period. If you can go from point A to point C and back to point D, it's decided as a cool-off period. That is the court definition. It has nothing to do with the DSM-5. I can tell you that now. And as far as insanity plea, they have been closing that gap. We closed that gap in Illinois a long time ago. People were pleading, and what would happen is, yeah, you can get convicted of a homicide, plead guilty by insanity. That's gone. Because what happened was people were pleading, they will go to what was then defined as a mental institution, and they will be able to be released by that doctor at the mental institution who has no background in criminology or criminal studies or criminal psychology. So we they found out, wait a minute, they're using that loophole. That loophole got closed.
In certain states.
Well, and also, there's also overcorrection because now certain states, because that loophole got closed, severely mentally ill people are not being acknowledged in our state sentence prison.
Okay, well, but again, the ones that did use it got away with it. So here it is, the good intent gets abused. So we see that. But again, let me go back to the first base point. Was what is it called? It's called a cool-off period. They don't go by any DSM-5 at all. So if you went from A, B, and back to C within X amount of time, that is defined as cool-off period. You had no time to decide, according to the court, you had no time to decide whether you wanted to take that action. And that's when we start getting into issues of mitigation and aggravating factors. So no, the DSM-5 does not work.
Really?
It is pillar in the, in our courtrooms. A mental health professional, any diagnosis, whether it's a licensed psychologist or LCMSW or even intellectual care that provides like mental health services to the Austin Police Department here, if you have a mental health diagnosis, you're scot-free.
But that only happens in Austin, let me tell you. It does not happen in Houston.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, Texas
so it depends on where you are, whether certain things are grow that way.
Is that
because the lawyers in Houston are actually doing their job?
Say that again.
Is that a result of the lawyers in Houston not actually doing their job fighting for their client?
Are they not? It could be.
Reverend Tony Tillman, come on, brother.
I'm enjoying listening. I'm going to put it this way. What I think to some people could be of little value, but I think a lot of this that we're seeing for the past, you could say 20 years, you could say 100 years, comes from an erosion of people caring. One reason that Joe is seeing all these people dying and these young kids becoming hitters, who really cares? I mean, he cares, but what can he do? To Dr. Fasey's point, it does take two incomes now. It didn't used to. That's where the term came from, wait till your dad gets home. Well, where did that come from? Because mom was always home. She didn't have to work. But now you have to work in order to afford what one person could bring in. Okay, so why is that? You could ask the question, why, five times like Toyota does, and you'll get to, okay, well, who's making money off of this?
If you
look at this, what Joe is seeing and what the chief is seeing, and then what the Shanti Walks are doing, and then what John, saw from a prison background, is the fact that the system, and we talk about it, is running like it's supposed to. They've given Americans, black people, a fixed deck of cards, and they want you to win against this deck, and they're asking you what you try to fix it. Okay, so who's making money? You got to have these kids on the streets shooting and committing crime. Why? Because now the prisons are private, and they need money. They have board members that have to do this. We have got how are drugs from a whole another country getting into, and it's been doing that for a long time. How are AK-47s getting into these communities? It's working as planned. And what I've always believed, if this were reversed, and we were talking about a bunch of white kids that were in jail and the white areas, are in trouble, and you wouldn't have this problem. But the judges are doing what they're supposed to be doing, because it's all about making money, the erosion of care, and also how can I profit off of this? Here in L.A. County where I live, we passed a bill. It was on the ballot. We wanted to take some of our tax money and put it aside to help the homeless. It was in the billions years ago, and they've done nothing. But what has increased? Not the amount of housing for the homeless, the amount of homeless. Why? There's no money to be made in helping the homeless. There's no profit to be made in helping 14-year-old kids get off the street. And when you look at the, again, Dr. Fady was there, starts at home. Yeah, but who cares? The dad does not care to stay around. The mother does not care who comes to her and says, hey, I think your kid has a mental problem. Don't tell me about my kids. Mind your own business. That came up more and more prevalent. And so you figure, okay, well, God, dog, man, what do? Okay, well, people want to blame the church. So blame the church because they're not doing nothing. Okay, well, then should you also blame the Jewish synagogues? Should you also blame the Muslim churches, the Muslim clerics? And if you say, well, they need to turn to Jesus, that ain't the answer. Well, then turn to Islam, all faith ain't the answer. Well, then you tell me, what is the answer? Okay, but if you know so much, what has worked? Nothing has worked. So then you figure, okay, well, dang, then what do? It's like the Shanti Walks. You do one thing. Just do one thing. So, and I don't know if I say this, Joe, if not, please forgive me, but Joe was a Chicago policeman. I am who I am today because of this man. Okay? Now, he kept that job and he retired. But you know what? He went back to work. He did one thing. And if America can find one thing to do, just one, you know, it's that story of the woman walking on the beach, and it was a bad storm I told you guys about. There were over 10,000 starfish that were dying on the seashore. And this man walked by and said, "Woman, what are you doing?" Because she was throwing them back in the water as fast as she could. And she told him there was a big storm. If I don't throw these back in the water, they're all going to die. And the man told her, "Woman, there's over 10,000 starfish. Do you think what you're doing really matters?" She picked up a starfish, threw it in the water, and she said, "To that one, it matters." And that's all that has to happen. So, and I'm not getting into a Black Lives Matter, because the way I get angry about is that Black Lives Matter, I love the movement, okay, to a point, but it was so much more profitable to have the t-shirts and the hats and the posters when the white man with the gun in the bag killed the black boy. But see, when the black boy, 14 years old, kills the black boy, Black Lives Matter all of a sudden don't matter. It only matters if the white folks kill the black folks. That's what I have a problem with. So, you know, and that is where I'm looking at it. If there is an erosion of care, and if I can't make money off of it, hey, I just ain't gonna do nothing about it. But you can't walk around with, there's so many problems, I'm just gonna be inactive. No, just do one thing. If it's gonna be children, if you wanna help children, help children. If you're gonna help homeless, but don't blame, because the coward sits by, "I blame the church, I blame the Muslims, I blame the white folks, I blame the mamas, I blame the problems. What are you doing? I'm sitting here blaming people." Then shut up. Thank you. Just find one thing to do. I've seen great people. I've seen great things come out of people turning to Islam. I've seen great things for people turning to Christianity. And I've seen great things for people turning into people who were spiritual people. I've seen great things out of all of that. And it's bad to discount it all and say, that ain't the way. Yeah, I'm at the point as a Christian, if I think Islam can help this person who has determined in their heart not to follow Jesus, I'm going to talk to John and be like, "John, brother, I need to know more about Islam, because it looks like it's helping this brother." So John, that's all I'm going to say, brother. Please come on, John.
Yeah, I just want to say to you real quick, right, and people keep saying about it starts in the home, and a lot of times the homes are effed up. I'm just going to say what it is. It's always going to be about community. Because when you think about when we was at our strongest, it was all about community. Mm-hmm. And for the mother that didn't know how to mother, there was a mother next door that knew. And she would help mother that child that she was raising and help teach you to become a young lady and teach this, her husband to take time out and teach your son how to work on the cars and things around the house. So it was always about community. Now, I want to say this, that these are elements that we're not looking at. In those same homes that you're talking about, it starts at home, but that's where a lot of criminal stuff starts at. Some of this stuff is inherited. I had dudes who talked to me and said, "Well, I never got jumped in the gang. My mother and father was down with y'all, so they just let me in." You know, it was like an inherited rap. They never had to go through the rituals of being in the gang, so it was passed down. Some of this criminal stuff, selling drugs and stuff, kids came up in their own homes. These same homes that you're talking about where it starts at is where they learn how to roll a joint at.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know how to get points to this day because nobody in my house spoke.
I got you there. And here's what I say to that. Okay.
Kids will learn how, they learn how to bag drugs, they learn how to weigh drugs, and some of these same houses. I was a co-founder of a street gang, and I had implemented rules and regulations, and I got nothing but great conduct out of the people. Why? Because people was no flimsiness in what I was doing. There was discipline involved in it. A lot of these homes, how is it that a street dude, a gang dude, can turn around, even discipline your child if they was wrong, and they can accept it, but in their own home, they see inconsistency. They see a hypocrite in their mother. They see a hypocrite in their father. You just spoke the back week with me last week, and now you want to tell me something?
You
want to tell me something? I can't believe when you were short on your rent, you came and borrowed $500 from me. So a lot of the stuff that starts in the home is a lot of the criminal stuff that we're talking about.
Which, yeah, and I agree with you. And here's where I think of the $1 bill and 4 quarters still equals a dollar. It all depends on where you're going to use it, because both are answers. If I'm going to be at a parking meter, I can't have a $1 bill. It's got to be coins. If I'm going to be going to a toll gate, I can't throw a dollar bill in the little bucket. It has to be changed, but it doesn't mean that one is wrong or one is right. For your situation, your examples, yes, community was much better than, you know, being at home. And I'll kind of say this as much as I can say. I was absent from the show up at the park last week, and I apologize. You know, wifey surprised me with some tickets to a movie screening. What was the movie? It was, and I advise you to go see it. Legally, I can't talk about a whole lot of it. Will Smith did a movie about Venus and Serena, and it's called King Richard, I believe. And they even changed the name. But what I'm getting at is, this brother here had 5 kids, 2 of them Venus and Serena. In the community that they lived in was terrible. If he had, you know, used the community to help his children, they would all be either dead, prostitutes, or be in jail. But however, what happened with him, it was home that helped him. So, you know, I advise you to, when it comes out, go see the movie. But see, John, in your example, and many examples like yours, the community was much more stable than home. But in that movie, and showing how it's like kind of a biopic, the Williams sisters were showing our home life was much more stable than the yo-yos that were out here in the community, because they wanted to rape us and kill my dad. And that's one reason they worked so hard to get out of the community but stay in that home life. So, you know, I was going to say, yeah, both are good. You know, some people have better communities, some people have better homes. With me, and Joseph knows this, I had a great home life. That's him being there. He could come to our home whenever he wanted to. But he knows where we live, where that funeral home was located. This wasn't the best community, but I made it because of my family and people like him. That's all.
Yeah. So, and both of y'all are right. And John, you're definitely right, too. Because I experienced that in my home, you know, before we got into foster care and things like that. We were left in the care. We were in foster care, but we could be close to our family. We was close to where. So I saw all of that. I saw all the rolling the drug. I saw all of that. But I vowed even then I was not going to be like what I was seeing. So it becomes an individual choice at times too. But on the flip side, I get what Tony's saying, because there were certain circumstances I was in where I'm like, you know, the environment's better than, I mean, the lifestyle inside the home is actually better than what environment I had come from. So I understand both sides, but going back to, almost lost my train of thought, going back to, I think it may have been Joe, the chief, yeah. But
I'm looking like.
No, you don't look like it. It's the root of all sin. And that's what's happened to home life.
Now let me inject this in there. All right, we're talking about the family, and we're talking about the community. Now let's just be real 100 for 1 minute. What happens when that negative element in the street, those bad people in the street, are more stable and real
than your family,
your church, your police department? Because all of us who've lived in environments where we've had, you knew who the bad people were. But you also knew what you could and could not do, should say or should not say. It's almost like, Joe, Chief, you understand this. As a police officer, we deal with bad people. Sometimes I was more comfortable in the so-called bad part of town than I was walking on the police department. Because I knew they could be a drug dealer. They could be a shooter. They were a gang member. But as long as I was 100 with them, they respected that. Now, this young element today, there is no honor. There are no guidelines. But I think saying that, and I'm not disagreeing, the house is important, the community is important, but sometimes even within that negative element, offers a degree of stability in the neighborhood that no other agency or organization is bringing. John sold drugs. John can't sell drugs with the police there every 5 minutes because somebody's doing something. So he had to provide safety and security to that neighborhood to some degree, and the neighbors had to trust it. Everybody wasn't scared. Some people said, you know what, them guys down there doing what they're doing, they're not bothering me. But the last time I called the police for this, this happened to me. Or, so within what we would tag as a negative, sometimes that negative is the only stable thing in a neighborhood of corrupt politicians, black or white or otherwise,
right,
who do nothing but abandon the community.
I think if I'd like to say something here real quick, one example. The country of Portugal, I went recently, a couple of years ago, they had major drug problems, major drug problems. And it's a beautiful country. The tourism industry was being completely, harmed because of the drug issue. So the legislators got together in this country and they said, you know what, we are going to decriminalize drugs of all sorts for a certain amount of time. And in fact, we're going to station buses and tents and these specific clinics. If anybody wants to shoot up, if anybody wants to, is having a withdrawal or whatever, we will monitor that and we will allow them to, ingest these drugs. And they did that for a certain amount of time by decriminalizing it. And now the drug problem is resolved. I think our leaders need... Greg Abbott is doing decent things in Texas, but our leaders need, an out-of-box creative kind of thinking. And the only plan that I have actually found to be truly universally accepted is the Truth in Reconciliation organization that was started by Nelson Mandela in South Africa. It still exists today. And we know all the heinous crimes that was committed against the black community in South Africa and also slavery and all of that. And it's wars against humanity, basically, against women, children, genocide, mass people. But everybody had touched a crime at some point, even if they haven't picked up a gun. And everybody was guilty, from judges to police officers. If you turned away from a crime, you were guilty of partaking in it. What they did is they put people together and they found different levels of pardoning, these people. And this is all closed doors, but that is how South Africa got back on its feet. And I'm studying that and I'm thinking, why can't some of our leaders today implement something like that? We can't respond hate with hate. And I really, really like what Reverend Tillman said, and I'm just wanting to ask you specifically, what is your solution specifically to these 14-year-olds that are being trained as hitters in Illinois? I mean, these are children, and that's why I'm very interested in knowing that, because these children matter. What is your solution to that?
My solution is just this.
find one. You know, I mean, if you're seeing a group of these 14-year-old kids who are hitters, can you talk to one? Can you show interest in one? Sometimes it just takes a conversation. You know, me being a Christian pastor, I'm not out here trying to convert people. I find that people just need conversation. If I'm in Chicago, you know, not trying to risk my life, but if I'm in Chicago and I have an opportunity to talk to this person, you know, it's something as simple as I walk into a 7-Eleven and I see this thug coming in here who I believe he's going to be in that car, and I know that he's one of the gangbangers. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to say, hey, brother, if it's okay with you, can I buy that for you? What you want to buy this for me for? I just felt like doing something good, and I want, you know, it could have been a bag of Doritos. It's like there's something you can do just to reach one. And yeah, now will it work? Who knows? But you can't say, I'm just going to round them up, I'm going to talk to them, I'm going to build a community center. We're going to have them play more basketball. Has that worked? We've been building community centers for the longest time, and it really hasn't worked. But let's just try to reach one, because if we can just reach one and pull him out, then, you know, mission accomplished. Now, it won't pull all of them out. But granted, people have the tendency to start thinking and say, man, Raheem ain't even rolling with us anymore. He out there doing this. I heard he got into college. Let them start to see how if one got out, then maybe some of us can get out of here. Because, again, I put, you know, a link on the chat. These kids are joining gangs because they want to be a part of the brotherhood. They want protection. Some of them were forced to be in a gang. And I would just say to anybody listening to me who wants to say, hey, what can I do? Just try to reach one. Just take one starfish and throw it back in the water and try to do that. That's all I would say. And that's, I got nothing. And I wish, and I'll throw the Christians, don't try to convert them on site. Don't be a serial Christian. Okay, I tell people, watch out for those serial Christians. Just have a conversation. Jesus didn't try to convert anybody, but he conversed with everybody. Just talk to them. That's all. If nothing else, just talk to them.
So, to say, and then I'm going to be probably finished. But when you think of the starfish situation, you know, it is about your son. We've got with Snoop Dogg and Ice Cube, and they just recently started this program called Gloves Up, Guns Down. And it's in Washington right now. They're doing it in Atlanta and in Washington State and L.A., in the L.A. area. And Snoop is actually the one that's actually funding it, you know. But it's a boxing ring. And it's starting to get the kids where they're, instead of going to the streets, they're talking about, put your guns down. Let's go in the boxing ring and start rechanneling that anger, rechanneling things. Teach them discipline, teach them structure. And they're taking, huh?
Oh, no, he's fucking.
We are a show of respect. He wasn't talking to Dr. Baby. He wasn't talking to you.
My son is involved in it. And actually, they're getting ready to have another thriller night. And it may seem stupid to some people. I'm not going to sit up here. But I think, again, it goes back to what you say. If you're just trying to change one person, if one person gets the idea, it doesn't matter who it's coming from. A person could have a beach. I don't know what anybody's history is with Snoop or anybody else, because Snoop has been in trouble himself at one time. But the thing about it is, if you're changing your ways and you're trying to change things for people, we can't knock Snoop for trying either, because it just takes, it's just like some people, like my son was changed by meeting up with them. There was a lot of things that he, I know you're shaking your head, but I know my son.
I'm talking about John.
I know the difference because my son spent two stints in prison, you know, and it was just like what Joseph was saying, you know, if you was doing right, I didn't defend my son when I knew he was wrong, but he didn't lie to me. I said, you tell me the truth. You know, you tell me the truth. Were you involved in this or that? Okay, then you got to do your time. I'll support you and love you. But when you come out of here, you better be doing right. And so he got his programs, he got his things to help him, he got his degree. He's doing good. And so he's in videography and stuff like that. So he's using it like that young lady just said about using music and things like that. And he's changing but he's actually going out there and changing people, or changing their mindset, helping them. And so if it takes one person to make a difference in another person's life, that's who started it, thrown back in there and change it. And so I say, just like I just say that, you know, it can all start with just one person. Go to a youth club and get one person and make a difference in one child's life, like I used to do with foster care. I went to a young teenage place, and I said, you know, a lot of people won't take foster kids that are teenagers because of the problems. But you know what? If you just make a life and you just take one child in your own and you give that child everything, not just because of the state gives you a certain amount of money, but you take children in because you really love them and you want to see a change and you want to make a change, then you take that one child in and you pour it into them love, pour it into them the things that they need. That's the change that needs to take place. So then that kid can turn around and tell another kid, I got, just like what Tillman said about Joseph, he was in my life. So that's what it takes. One person, don't be so selfish to think of me and my four and no more. Let's start talking about, let's take it, go out there. Go out there. We chef and we talk about things all day, but how many of us really open up our homes to a person or a child and say, let's go in there, let me go and take them on Saturday and spend time with them so they can see another one? A lot of people don't do those things.
Let me do this.
I'd like to volunteer.
May I speak real
quick? Yeah, sure. I just want to say one thing because I got to get off. I'd like to say thank you for letting me be on here, Chief Devlin. I really appreciate that, and I really appreciate the Starfish story and Stan. I would like to volunteer because Shanti Walk, about 50 parents, we are coming to walk in Chicago. We're going to end up having Illuminati's later. But if there's something that we can do to raise awareness, we'll be walking at least 111 miles. I would love to sign up for that, and I would like for us to help in any way we can for these 14-year-olds.
Well, we appreciate you being here. Go ahead, John.
Thank you. Namaste. First of all, Dr. Casey, I owe you an apology. I was yelling at my dogs who was growling in the background.
Okay.
And then Joe sent me a little text, and I shook my head, and you thought I was talking about. So for about 3 times, going back like 30 years, 35 years, we always had boxing gloves that we kept in the corner stores. We kept boxing gloves in the trunks of our cars. And we had, when guys had conflict, they put the gloves on. And you know, we had to have the gloves so that they'd be more exhausted than throwing punches.
Right.
I went into the young lady asked a couple questions. And one was about those 14-year-old hitters that she asked Tony about. And the way that you attack the situation is you hold the gang leaders also responsible for whatever crime they commit. Whatever organization they're part of, you hold them responsible. You track down where he got that gun from, and you hold that person responsible.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hold his mother and father responsible. You hold those people who turned him into this machine that he is. And like I said, a lot of this takes place in the streets. And I'm telling you this from a street person's, former street person's perspective. You have to hold whatever gang that is, whoever is his leaders, who sent them on that mission, you got to hold them accountable. You got to hold them just as much accountable, if not more, for sending that young kid or training that young kid and turning him into a weapon. So that's the first thing. And then she mentioned something about decriminalizing drugs and stuff. I just want to point out something. There's a weed dispenser not too far from where I live at. But there's also about 15 weed dealers right here where I live at. So you could take the drugs and say that we're going to decriminalize it. But if you don't decriminalize the mindset of the individual, it will not. That's the problem, is the mindset of the individual, the people that's out here selling the drugs, the people that's out here using it. Now, if there's people that need to use the drugs for medical reasons, okay? But that's not the case. I can walk right out here right now and watch transactions take place. And yet, right up the street is a weed dispenser. So I just want to say that you have to get rid of this criminal mindset that we have. You have to go after the fact that there's a lack of self-love and care for one another. How is it that I can look at you and point a gun at you and just take your life or rob you or whatever the case may be? So, and we talked about what you was talking about is that, and I actually shared with Tone, I believe, a program that I was creating that because they want to hit our youth basketballs and footballs every time they want to get them off the streets, why not take these same kids and give them trades? Because if you teach them how to become plumbers and HVAC and electricians, now you are securing a future for them. You're now putting these kids in a position where they can open up their own business. So allocate money, if legislation's got money to pass around, put it where these kids can get these technical trades, which they took out of the school system. Mm-hmm. When you give them their technical mm-hmm. trades, they already have the mindset of entrepreneurs. And what it's called is transferable skills. So now when you take that trade and put it with that mindset that they already have of being an entrepreneur, and then you got $10,000 to put toward his equipment to start his own business, you got a chance of securing that kid's future.
But you know,
if you're giving him a basketball to bounce around, and then after 2 hours of playing basketball, he's back to the streets.
And you know, John, they still have a VOTEC program. They took it out of the schools, you're right, and they said it was too expensive. But they put it in the prison, and now you get 25 cents an hour, doing twice the labor, and you don't actually, you come out without the accreditation. You may spend 20, 25 years doing a specific job, and you come out, and they said, well, you're not licensed. See, so it, they just moved it away from it, took that opportunity from a lot of kids to VOTEC programs, because we had them when I was growing up.
Yes. Well, I'm going to tell you something else, Bill said, that you could actually, like, I graduated from Johnson & Wells, and it's either one or two culinary school in the whole United States. And my instructor was a gold apron chef who actually taught me. He was the head of all the carnival crews as a cook, Harry DeSalt. So, actually, they do have in prison, believe it or not, for those who go the extra step, you can get actual trades while you're in prison. But it's sad that children have to be in prison, and most of the guys who got lights and stuff, they would never get out to use it.
Yeah, let me.
So the most thing you do is take it in and take care of the prison.
Let me grab this caller right quick, Doc, and then we'll come right back to you. 314 area code 4600. Good morning.
Hey, Stan, how you doing? No, I'm for legalization of street drugs. I'm going to tell you why. First place, addicts are sick. All right. We realize that. But if street drugs was legalized, then you would remove the criminal activities out of it, the dangerous activities of street sales and distribution. That addict could go to a government set up dispensary. They can get drugs of the right quality and quantity so they don't get overdose and poison. And if that street addict, if that addict wants to sign up for further treatment, he or she can do so. They can tax it, where taxes go toward other social programs. But the way it is now, you got people, innocent people being killed, getting caught up in these gun battles and disputes. And that has to stop. It needs to stop. So that's my position on the legalization of street drugs. And you can't legislate people's mindsets.
Mm-hmm.
You can't take people, you can't pass laws and say you got to think this way or you can't think that way. Hell, the U.S. Constitution gives you a right to associate or disassociate if you want to. So that was my point.
All righty, we're about at that 20-some minute mark. You know,
pretty good. I wanted to listen to that caller saying, you know, a lot of people have those same type of ideas, and I won't say there's anything wrong with that. But again, like with Portugal, which was a good example the young lady had mentioned, and like what he's saying, you know, decriminalizing this, we keep forgetting we are a country of scandal. We are a country of private prisons. If you were to decriminalize all of these, do you know that the government, look at the contracts. I urge everyone to look at the contracts between the government of the United States and private prisons. The government is on the hook for making up the financial difference if we have sold a prison to a private institution and they don't have the capacity that we told them they were going to have. The government has to subsidize and give them that money. That is where we are and have been in this country. So we are never going to decriminalize everything. And the day of having empty prisons, again, I keep saying they were given a fixed deck of cards. It's working as it's supposed to because there's too much money to be made in hate. There's too much money to be made in prison. There's too much money to be made keeping people, certain people oppressed. It's working for a lot of people, and it's not going to change if they have anything to do with it. So I applaud an effort to try to empty our prisons. But as long as you've got greed, the root of all evil, it's just not going to happen.
You know, Tony, there's no money. America does never solve problems. We just don't. There's no money in cures. There's money in treatment. So we milk people. You know, I, as an officer, my job literally, anybody wearing a badge, quite frankly, your job is to do one thing, reduce or eliminate crime and make that community safer. That's it. Let's just take that one little thing. If we could magically do that today and we just wave the wand and we did that, I'll tell you the next mandate that would come down. You're not putting enough people in jail. You're not writing enough tickets. You're not doing. And so, not to go into that whole police discussion, but we can't on one hand be revenue generators and be expected to be problem solvers. So the system has a problem. And you're right. If the system has become a welfare system and there's more money spent on prisons and keeping folks in prison than getting folks into college and forgiving student debt, which is a whole other show. But you know, that's just the root of it. We got about 20 minutes. I want to get around to everybody for about 2 or 3 minutes of final thoughts because, man, this has been good. Doc, you're first up.
Well, what you just said kind of reminded me of when my oldest daughter, who's 35, when she was just graduating high school, and we didn't have the actual money to put her in the college that she wanted to go to. And the lady at the place told her, well, you know, because you don't have a child, if you had a child, we'd be able to help you get into this college. And I thought, how sad. How sad. Because here I am, a mom that's trying to tell my daughter, don't go off and get pregnant. Go ahead and try to go to school and everything. But because we weren't financially in the position to pay for it all, you know, and we were, I was remarried, so my ex-husband, I mean, my husband that I was married to, that I'm married to now, it's not his child. He married me when she was already 16. So even though he's willing to help, it was like you're counting his money and it's our money because we're married, but it's still not his responsibility. I guess some people would look at that. That's how I felt about it. It's like not totally his responsibility, but they were trying to make him take his money and pay for her whole cost. You know, and it was like we don't have the money. But for someone to tell her, well, if you went and got pregnant, you know, she has 5 children now. Now, she's also a good mom, and she is doing the right thing. But at the same time, the mindset is telling her, just like the prison system, we'll give you these trades once you get to prison. Mm-hmm. But before you get in prison, we don't have the money for you to do it. So a lot of things can be stopped if they put the money in the right, fixed it towards the right situation before it got bad. Mm-hmm. We wait for it to get bad, and we say, well, oh, my God, what do we do? But They should have invested in these people young, in younger ages, and those types of things. So that's what happens a lot of times.
So I appreciate you, Doc, and you know you're always welcome here, boy. I knew this was going to get spirited today. Let me drop down to our other guest out of Austin. You know, take a couple minutes. We appreciate you taking time out, especially short notice, you know, and celebrating your birthday last night. I think it was like 1 o'clock when I sent you a message and you came in. So I appreciate you.
I don't know if I was miserable after having a couple of beers and taking my fix. But, Thank you for this was very, very enlightening to see what's going on in one of my favorite towns, Chicago. I used to live right by Money Guys Legends, Kingston Mines. I used to walk over, and I love Chicago, and I have a lot of friends there. I just don't know, you know, what to say. I just want to be there and try to collaborate. I put my email address in the link, alphamomomega@gmail.com. It really is something new that I've not heard about before. My father is a retired police chief in India, and my mom was a criminal defense attorney. My grandfather was a judge. So I've seen how my father has resolved a lot of conflicts growing up. He's a very honest cop. And I just loved how he put on his uniform, but he was a gentle giant. And he still is very much alive. I say was because he retired. And he resolved some big issues, like conflicts between Hindus and Muslims. And I saw how he did it. He did it by taking care of himself and realizing that he is not going to be able to eliminate crime in his district, but he certainly reduced it. He got attacked for it. He was beaten up and left to death in an alley somewhere. But both Hindus and Muslims came together, and they took him to the hospital. And my father survived because of the joint effort of Muslims and Hindus during a riot, which I cannot even, it makes me emotional, because that is a lasting impression for me. And that is what I say, that I agree with Reverend Tillman. And if I can get some numbers from Keith Devlin, if anything that we can do, talk about statistics and see how many 14-year-olds are facing these problems, and actually put some small plans. We can't do anything. We're a very small nonprofit, but we can walk. If there's anything we can do, we can walk, we can talk, and we can be there. We're going to be there in July, walking in Shanti, walking in Chicago. So. Love Chicago, so I'm just really grateful to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, we appreciate you being here. We definitely appreciate you. Big job. Come on, brother.
Yeah, I think the problem is real serious. The problem is that we do a lot of this. We talk about it a lot. It's not enough action. What she just said, what Dr. Facey said, what Tony, Izzy, Jim, Joe, as well as you, Stan, all of that matters. And all of it should be on the table. Whatever it takes to turn this thing around, we need to get to it, man. If we got to walk some, if we got to preach some, if we got to arrest some, we got to work our way out of this situation, man, and it's going to take action. The problem is that we sit at table, we have discussions a lot, we know what the problems are. We know what the problem is, and we have to get to it, man. We just got to get down to business and stop tiptoeing around people's feelings. There is such a thing as black-on-black crime. And before the show, we was having a discussion, and I said to Joe that when I first came into the streets, it was promoted, it was talked about. Yo, you don't rob the white dude, bro. Don't shoot the white dude. You're going to get a whole lot of time for that. Black dude, man, get a good lawyer, you'd be right out. So black-on-black crime is promoted in the streets. And I'm telling you this firsthand. I'm not telling you what someone told me. that someone told them. I'm telling you firsthand what goes on. So people, it's a train. People are being trained to target each other. And then when you go in the element of what Izzy spoke on, I wish he would have spoke a little more, is that lack of education. And the fact there's a lack of self-education. And I'm going to shut up on this last piece. We talked about the microwave era, when you throw the food in. You know, the thing about it, Stan, when your mother used to cook, you could taste the love in her food. And you knew that she loved you because you could taste, look at Jim smiling. She probably got some on the stove now. You could taste the love in your mother's cooking. The reason why they make such a disconnect between the child and the parent is because there's no love in throwing something in the microwave. There's no love in getting something to the drive-thru.
Happy meal.
So all of this is relevant stuff to me. And on that note, I thank everybody. And to the sister, happy birthday, late birthday, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Dr. Facey,
it's always a pleasure.
And thank you. It was a pleasure
meeting you. Hey, John, I do have to tell you, though, that moment between y'all, I'm going to cut that out of this video because all of us, Dr. Facey, we all laughed because we knew John was yelling at his dogs, but he didn't. So that look was just classic. I mean, that was...
Don't cut it out. Just be like, Dr. Facey beat up. She'll be playing.
You want to fight woman and son?
Oh, yeah. All right. Reverend Tony. Come on, Reverend Tony. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was going up there with Sally, you know.
anybody remember the debate? Shut up, man. Remember that?
Yeah. Reverend, tell me. 2 minutes, Reverend.
I'm the one that people hate to follow, but John got all the beautiful words. And with my final 2 minutes, you know, I'm just going to say that I really have enjoyed the conversation that we've had on this show. You know, again, I'm going to talk about one thing. I have created an acronym. If anybody wants to make a t-shirt and make a whole lot of money, you know, just tie to my church. But a lot of people are using, we keep using the word woke. And this kind of came to me the other day, and I think it's purposeful for this show. If you look at woke, to me, has been misrepresented. The acronym I created is W-O-K-E, woke, when our knowledge evolves. In order to have somebody understand this term, you have to understand that there are two Americans. You know, and what kind of, you know, made me think about it was watching a hockey game and watching all of these fans, majority white in the stands, singing with glee and with joy the Star Spangled Banner. And then looking it up and understanding where it came from and how we don't, you know, sing the second verse of that, talking about the slave will not be redeemed, you know, and then how racist that whole song is, you know, and how there are people in this country who can look at Officer John Carlton, the pillar of his white community, goes to Compton, California, and kicks the ass, literally, of black and brown individuals who are 14 years old. They don't understand, you know, when you see police, you see a different thing. We see a different thing. You know, when you see the flag, we see a different thing. When you see a banker, when you see a hospital, there's two different Americas. And then what John did made me think about this whole term of woke, looking at it from the black person standpoint. There's even two types of Americas within black America where, you know, look at me. I didn't go through a lot of what people went through my own age in high school. And Joe can tell you some of my classmates had it real hard, but I didn't. I have to acknowledge there are two different Americas, one for me and then one for them. That's why they either wind up dead or in jail. So if we're going to have the conversation and use the word woke, you have to first wake up and understand there's two types of Americans, and we have to get a conversation going where white people can stop being angry when black people don't stand for the flag and the national anthem, because it means two different things to you. When you are white and you see the flag and you know that what your dad did and how the government has helped you and they helped you do this and Officer Carlson helped you do this and you stand with pride, and we look at it as we got our asses kicked and we're told to sit on the ground because we did nothing wrong and we told the cop there's urine on the ground, man, I don't care, stop resisting. We don't look at things the same way. And then you ask us to stand up for that flag when I know damn well what this country has done to my people. I cannot look at this country the way you can. So stop getting angry if I don't get gleeful about this country like you do. It's done you one way, and it continues to do you one way, and it continues to do us another way. And that is when we have to, that's when you finally wake up and know that there are two different Americas. There always has been. The way the banks treat you, the way the hospitals treat you, the way the law is.
Yes.
And it's not going to change anytime soon. Maybe we can have hope. My last 30 seconds. Maybe we can have hope. They said in 2045, the white population will be less than 50% in this country. I'm not trying to annihilate white people, but maybe if you white people are in the minority for once, you'll wake up and be woke and see, I didn't notice that before. No, you didn't. Because now you're going before a black judge. Now you're going before a black attorney general. Now because you're going before a black banker who's going to decide if you get the loan or not. 1980, white people were 80% of this country. In less than 100 years, they're going to be less than 50% in this country. Maybe that's what we have hope. Not by the annihilation of white people, but by the annihilation of all that racism and privilege and all of that that comes along with it. So, yeah, I'm happy when I see a white boy and a black girl. I'm happy when I see a white woman and an Asian man, because I know there's a chance that by the time I have kids and they get grown, they won't have to worry about what does nigger mean. Mm-hmm. And I'll stop.
Appreciate you, Tony. Izzy.
Man, I got to follow Tony. I got nothing following that. I am humbled by the experiential knowledge on this down. I'll double down what I always say, Paul and Tony said, and the closest thing we have to a silver bullet in this country is education. I'd like to see more people marching to improve education in this country than marching for ambiguous things like ending racism, which is a nice ideal, but how are you going to do that? Education. And I'd say if education is the silver bullet, then racial equity in education is probably the second round. Like, you need to start teaching education from the perspectives of the people, from the lenses that Tony was talking about. I think that things like art and music for to help people who are addicted to drugs and mental illness is nice, but I think people who are mentally ill need treatment more than they need art and music. I think people that are drug addicted need rehabilitation and treatment more than they need music and art. I think we need to put money into these areas. I think part of the problem is a lot of the stuff that we're talking about, you have to ask, well, why is it happening? Why are mm-hmm. they being treated like this? Why are these results happening? Why is the microwave food conversation that we're having, why is that happening? Is it because they live in food deserts where that's the only option, where there aren't any grocery stores, vegetables and stuff like that? Like, why are these things happening? And the last thing I'll say is something that comes to my mind since the normal work I'm doing. We need to stop having these kind of light switch.
That's that Wi-Fi.
No, I wanted to hear you.
No, he'll come back.
It'll
be 5 seconds, and he'll come back, and he'll say, see, that happens to me every week. I hate this New York Wi-Fi. But he'll come back in the scenario.
There you go.
Yes.
Every time. Yeah, light switch conversations. I'm running into a lot of people that are having light switch conversations about these topics. I talked to a woman the other day that was kind of talking about getting kids out of schools, and I asked her about solutions and what she wants to do, and it was all a light switch thing. It was all like, if we just get the cops out of schools and replace replace them with these social services and everything's going to be fixed. Everybody has these ideas in our head that if we just change things instantly, that things are going to improve. And I think it's a detriment to the problem. People have a bad concept of evolution. Evolution is long. It takes a long time. It's painful. There's going to be a lot of problems on the way. And we need to start having these conversations in that mindset. Improving these things isn't going to be a light switch. Improving them is going to take time. It's not going to benefit us. It's going to benefit the next generation and the generation after that. I think part of the problem now is people are having conversations that are too immediate. They're expecting change too immediately. And that comes from frustration, and the frustration is valid. But it's an unrealistic expectation to think that if we just take this one thing out and replace it with this, that's going to be it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we just get rid of cops in this area and replace it with this, that's going to fix it. If we just throw money in, all the money we can into social services, and that's going to fix everything. It's just, it's a short-term solution. These are long-term problems because, yes, we need to shrink ideas. Yes, we need to put money into certain things, but you also need to have a long-term mindset of keeping to pay attention to these problems. The social services isn't great. Foster care isn't great. And if you just throw money at these problems, it's not going to solve everything.
Yeah, not at
all. All right. Amen, Ed. Big Chief, final thoughts.
Well, Master John and Tony and now Izzy, I was actually happy to call my name after Tony. So, there's a lot of I'm gonna sum this up as a practitioner of the law enforcement. I guess that's the best way to put it. Joe, I think will agree with me, and I do agree with Tony's analogy. Right, I do agree about going one at a time, trying to reach one at a time. But everybody also needs to be prepared sometimes when you jump that starfish in the water, it crawls back out again. I mean, the next phrase, that's the bad people. So, I mean, the idea that we can go fix everybody is not valid, nor is it true. But we do have to start one at a time. The caller that called in about the legalization, I mean, my first impression, I've got my viewpoint, which is obviously a little different than everybody else's, but if you notice, you talked about that problem being pushed somewhere else. That's what it is. If you're going to tax it, where's that tax money going? Remember that I said this one show, where's the tax lottery money? Well, that's supposed to fund education?
That part.
Where is it? Yeah, we have this grand idea of what this is going to do. It doesn't work. John is a perfect example. He's got a legal dispensary right around the corner, but he's got the marijuana dealers within yards of where he's at. Why are they there if you can go buy it legally? I don't think that necessarily stops the problem. And to follow up with what Izzy said, they need treatments. Put money into that, get them fixed. I love the idea of community so that we try it and talk about it on the show. And again, go back to Tony, one at a time. One at a time, these good people get into these situations, multifaceted, regardless of where they're at, and trying to help folks get out of the situations that they're in, create better citizens, and hopefully they don't push into a life that they can't get out of. But again, I go back to say there are some people, they're not going to change until it's absolutely time for them to change or they hit the rock bottom. We've got people, John, for example, John could continue on with his lifestyle and the things that he did. I'm sure he was very lucrative with it. But there's something that happened to him that made him want to change. And he changed because he wanted to change. Other than that, that's all I got. Great show. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate you, Chief. Tell Ms. Chief we said hi, and we appreciate her sharing you with us, especially every Saturday morning. Big Joe, take us out.
Let me just say this. Let me bring us back full circle. We initially started talking about this thing called black to black crime. Just because you deny it does not mean the facts cease to exist. It does exist. There's such a plague on us that this thing does exist. So let's stop with the nonsensical bullshit. Because again, we all agree on this panel that in order to go forward, we have to admit we have a problem. We want America to talk about racism, but we don't want to talk about we got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So let's before we take up somebody else's want to share it first. The other thing is this. Who are the experts? Tony put on something about, you know, why people go to gangs, join gangs. Somebody like John and Isidore should be the masters, particularly the mom, John, should be writing that book. Has anybody on this panel been questioned as to what this new reform should look like? They have not asked any of us. They should. Because we are practitioners. And it ain't going to happen. That's the problem. It goes back to something Isidore was alluding to. I will say this, though. I'm glad to have this platform. At least people are beginning to hear some other sides of the story as opposed to what certain media outlets want to put out there. Mm-hmm. Because we do hit our topic. We do talk about it. And I just want to say everybody have a good weekend. And John, I mean, hey, John, I'm not sure. I just want to recognize you there. It's a great color.
Oh, Lord.
I didn't have to get Tony.
That hat is in the mail. I'm sending you that hat.
Thank you again.
I thought Dick was told to realize what shirt I have on. Hey, Dan.
Yo.
Just in closing, man.
Real quick.
Yeah, you could take a dick and go down. But the second you leave some more mud, you could jump right back in it. And that's the mentality of people.
You don't change the mentality of people.
If he is correct.
No, let me fall.
If he helps.
All right. With that, we're going to get out and we're going to leave with some Commodore.
I love one
of
them.
Thank you, John, Chief, Tony, Joe's already out, Izzy. Everybody be safe, and we're out.
God bless you all. God bless y'all. Thank you, Jesus. He won't let you down.